Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really getting into something critical.
Absolutely.
How we can actually improve funding for clinical studies through, well, better collaboration.
Yeah. And it might sound a bit, you know, dry funding, but it's the lifeblood for getting new health innovations to people.
It really is. And the current setup, it's challenging. You've got standard paths like NIH grants, but they often don't really cover clinical studies well.
Right. And then you have all these other players of federal money, companies, foundations, VCs, but they seem to work in their own little worlds, disconnected.
Which means, especially for innovations in, say, dental, oral, craniofacial, DOC, and regenerative medicine, RM, well, they struggle.
They really do. Getting close to clinical application, let alone reaching patients, it's a huge hurdle because of these funding roadblocks.
So we wanted to figure out, how do we fix this? We looked at insights from panel 4 of the 2025 Translational Resource Center Networking Exchange.
And it was quite a panel, a real mix of perspectives.
Yeah, definitely diverse. We had industry voices like Maria Ryan from Colgate-Palmolive.
Foundations, too. Denise Marks from CareQuest Institute for Oral Health.
Professional groups like James Schultz from the ADA.
And the VC angle from Maria Filipova at 4100DX.
Mm.
So really different viewpoints.
Exactly. So our mission here for you listening is to pull out the really key ideas on navigating this, well, complicated funding world.
And hopefully speed up the process of getting innovations to patients. So where do we start? It's a big topic.
Well, thinking about everything the panel covered, what stood out as maybe the most effective way to unlock more funding? Was there like one big idea?
There really was. Almost unanimously, the idea that kept coming up was the power of the economic argument.
The economic argument.
Yeah. Basically changing how we talk about it, moving away from just, say, dental loss or isolated oral issues.
And then framing it how?
Framing it in terms of broader systemic health savings. Think overall public health impact. The bigger financial picture.
Okay, that makes sense. Can you give an example? Like, how did Maria Filipova maybe take a dental issue and turn it into that kind of broader economic pitch?
Oh, absolutely. She gave a great example. Managing periodontal disease.
Yeah.
It's not just about gums.
Right.
It can actually lower the risk of preterm labor. And the cost saving there,
potentially
huge, like $500,000 to $750,000 per case.
Wow. $500,000 to $750,000.
Exactly. Numbers like that, they grab attention way beyond the usual dental funding circles. Suddenly, it's not just a dental problem, it's a major healthcare cost issue.
That totally reframes it. It makes you realize it's about way more than just teeth. I remember hearing Howard Schultz from Starbucks once say they spent more on healthcare than coffee beans.
That's a perfect example. It shows how these costs directly hit a company's profits.
But it wasn't just about money, right?
No, not always.
Maria Filipova also mentioned things like malocclusions, you know, when teeth don't line up right in kids.
Uh-huh.
That can lead to bullying, teasing. That's a quality of life impact, not dollars and cents, but still incredibly powerful.
Definitely. And she had this idea about relabeling, too. Yes. Instead of calling it periodontal disease management, frame it as inflammation management.
Ah, clever.
Because that immediately connects with medical folks, investors who care about heart disease, diabetes. It brings groups like the American Heart Association, American Diabetes Association into the conversation.
So it's about leading with the impact, the why, before you get buried in the scientific details. Mm. Did they talk about how scientists can actually do this better, become better storytellers?
They did. Maria Filipova really stressed that scientists, entrepreneurs, they need to be great storytellers. Mm. Focus on the end result.
Like what?
Like, what's the vision? Less invasive treatments, detecting diseases early with just saliva, getting great care outside the dentist's chair.
Yeah.
People connect with those kinds of stories, the human impact,
yeah,
more than just charts.
Makes sense. Personal stories over pie charts.
Exactly.
And what about keeping that message going? Because it sounds like you can't just say it once.
No, definitely not. James Schultz made a really important point there. Decision makers, especially people like congressional staff, they turn over pretty quickly.
How quickly?
Maybe 9 to 18 months sometimes. So you have to keep educating, keep repeating those economic arguments, that health integration message. You can't just assume they heard it or, you know, that they get it.
Right. Constant reinforcement. Okay. So step one is nailing that economic story. But then comes the actual science, the clinical validation. That seems like the next big mountain to climb.
It is. And navigating clinical research is complex. What were the key things there for getting funded and actually running a successful study?
Maria Ryan from Colgate-Palmolive really hammered home the need for solid preclinical data first.
Absolutely foundational. You need that proof before you pour money into clinical trials because they are so expensive.
Right.
She shared that really interesting story about Atradox.
Oh, yeah, the dog drug. That was a pretty creative funding route.
Wasn't it? A periodontitis drug, first licensed for dogs, based on successful animal studies, because dogs get periodontitis naturally.
Okay.
And the money made from the vet license. That helped pay for the human clinical trials later on.
Yeah.
Just a brilliant example of thinking differently about funding.
Super clever. Generate revenue, de-risk the human trials. But Maria Ryan also pointed out, even if you get the funding, clinical trials are full of potential pitfalls.
Oh, for sure.
What did she say were the critical things to get right?
Well, first off, communication. Constant, clear communication between the sponsor and the research sites is just essential.
Okay.
And then the trial design itself has to be meticulous. You need crystal clear primary and secondary goals, endpoints. You need enough statistical power working closely with statisticians right from the start.
And finding the right places to actually do the study.
Crucial. You need sites that actually have the right patients, that can recruit them and keep them in the study, plus the right clinical expertise for whatever you're testing, and well-calibrated investigators.
And I guess just following all the rules is non-negotiable.
Absolutely. Compliance is huge. Things like informed consent, making sure everyone sticks to the protocol, robust monitoring, those CRAs, clinical research associates, and coordinators, they are vital.
Makes sense.
Oh, and she also mentioned, you know, you have to register your trial nowadays if you want to publish your results.
Right, that's standard now.
And using modern tools helps too. AI for managing data, remote monitoring, electronic systems like Veeva for data capture. He can make things much smoother.
Okay, so we've covered the challenges, the complexity. Let's shift gears a bit. How do we actually attract the investment, grow the pot of money available? Denise Marks mentioned these isolated pockets of funding.
Yeah, she did.
Who are they, and how do we bridge those gaps?
So the pockets are sort of the usual suspects, but separate. Foundations, wealthy individuals, strategic corporate partners. She mentioned Colgate-Palmolive, Henry Schein, and venture capital.
Right.
And things like accelerators are trying to bridge that gap.
Yeah.
Denise Marks runs the Smile Health Accelerator at CareQuest.
And
what they do is connect the entrepreneurs with those corporate folks, with investors. They provide this whole ecosystem of brain power, as she put it.
Ecosystem of brain power. I like that.
Yeah. Helping with go-to-market, figuring out market size, navigating regulations, reimbursement, all that tricky stuff.
That sounds incredibly useful. Jim Schultz also talked about an institutional bias against dentistry. What did he mean by that? Why does it affect funding?
Well, his point was that dentistry is actually a pretty small slice of the overall healthcare spending pie, like 2.5, maybe 3%.
Surprisingly small.
Yeah. It's mostly a Main Street industry, meaning lots of smaller independent practices. So patient groups and clinical sites don't scale up easily in the way big investors or government programs often look for. You don't see the same kind of consolidation as in other parts of healthcare.
So the scale isn't there for the big players.
Pretty much. So his argument was we need to collectively grow the pie for the whole oral health sector itself to become more attractive for larger funding.
Makes sense. Grow the whole field. Were there thoughts on looking beyond the U.S. global strategies?
There were. Maria Filipova mentioned companies looking overseas for trials. Places like Australia or even Kazakhstan.
Kazakhstan? Why there?
Apparently, they have a universal health record and a single-payer system. That can make things like patient recruitment easier or potentially cheaper.
Interesting.
But Maria Ryan added a really important caution. You absolutely have to understand the regulatory landscape wherever you go.
Right, because the data needs to be usable back here, say, for the FDA.
Exactly. You don't want to do a whole trial and find out the data isn't accepted in the market you care about most.
Definitely not. Jim Schultz also mentioned this era of deregulation. How might that play into things?
His thought was it could potentially make private investment a bit easier. If barriers come down, processes get streamlined, maybe private capital becomes more willing to bet on international data or smaller studies.
Interesting possibility. And for the entrepreneurs listening right now, thinking about raising money, is it just a terrible time?
Well, Denise Marks said that despite it being challenging, there is still capital available, dry powder, as they call it.
Okay, so money's out there. What's the advice then? How do you make your pitch stand out?
Maria Filipova put it bluntly. You need a no-brainer pitch.
A no-brainer, meaning what?
Meaning it needs to make immediate sense. Sensible valuation for your company, be totally upfront about the risks, and crucially, Have the right team. Investors bet on people.
Right. The team is key.
And on getting that team, it's not just about salary anymore. You need to attract people with a sense of purpose, offer them growth opportunities, maybe flexible compensation equity, bonuses tied to milestones, or even bringing in experienced execs on a fractional basis for specific needs.
Creative solutions.
Yeah.
Okay, this leads us nicely into the final big theme, which felt really profound, changing our whole mindset.
Yeah, this is a big one.
Jim Schultz painted this picture, this dream of truly integrated health. Dentists acting almost like primary care docs, using biomarkers for early detection.
Connecting everything up through apps, getting beyond just the physical dental office.
Exactly. But Maria Filipova pointed out the biggest barrier to that dream might just be us, our own thinking.
How so?
Well, we tend to think of ourselves, scientists, entrepreneurs, as being just in oral health.
Right. We stay in our lane.
But she argued we need to see ourselves as being in the business of, well, bigger things. Military readiness, quality of care improvement, quality of life improvement, cost of care reduction. It's much broader.
That's a huge shift in perspective.
It really is. And it means, practically, maybe don't just wait for the specific oral health advocacy day.
Right.
Get involved in broader health conferences like HLTH. Join advocacy efforts focused on general health or the military readiness angle or the overall economic impact.
So break out of the echo chamber.
Precisely. Get out of the silo where, you know, we feel comfortable talking to our friends and colleagues who already understand oral health. We need to weave it into the main healthcare conversation.
And Denise Marks added, that takes proving the business case for making those changes. It means tackling system barriers, like different electronic health record systems that don't talk to each other.
Yeah, the practical hurdles.
And really pushing for care coordination where doctors see the whole patient, including their oral health.
It seems like some are already doing this. Maria Ryan talked about Colgate-Palmolive changing its own identity.
Oh, right, from just a toothpaste company.
To a healthcare company. With a purpose statement about reimagining a healthier future for everyone, people, pets, the planet, that's a big internal reframing.
It absolutely is. It really underlines that point. Oral health isn't separate. It's woven into overall systemic health.
So wrapping up this deep dive, it feels like the core message for tackling these funding challenges in DOC and RM is about breaking out of those silos we keep mentioning.
Yeah, thinking bigger.
Making those strong economic arguments that resonate widely, really showing the human impact, and just constantly reinforcing that oral health isn't an add-on. It's fundamental to overall health, to the economy. It's all connected.
Absolutely. It requires that broader vision.
So maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to take away from all this. How could truly adopting that wider health perspective thinking beyond just the label of oral health change how you approach your work?
Your next innovation, or maybe even just your next conversation about why this field matters so much. How could that shift things?